Web special one-hour political roundtable on Rhode Island Public Radio. I'm Rhode Island Public Radio political reporter Ian Donis. We're coming to you from historic Union Station in downtown Providence, the home of the Rhode Island Foundation, which is co-sponsoring tonight's event. Tonight we'll be hearing from the two Republican candidates for governor, Ken Block and Alan Fung. I'll be asking questions of the candidates along with Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay and University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. We've also collected some questions from Rhode Island Public Radio listeners. I'll moderate the discussion and jump in if the candidates go too long or don't answer the questions. And in our final segment, we'll hear the candidates asking each other some questions. So before long, we're going to get into some policy-based discussion, but I'd like to start with some little more political questions for each of the two candidates. We'll start with Ken Block. Mr. Block, when you first got into politics, you told us that Rhode Island needed a moderate party. You're now a Republican. You told us that you would initially honor a boycott of WPRO because of comments made by a host on that station, and you know you now go on WPRO. What do you say to people who question whether you're a political chameleon?
Wow. Well, those two statements aren't connected to each other in any way. I got involved in politics to make change. Rhode Island needs change desperately. The political status quo that we struggle under isn't working for us. It made sense to me when I created the Moderate Party that was an answer. It was a political answer to a political problem. What I learned after we created the party was that it is not the way to make political change. Third parties can't make political change. I didn't understand that until we went through the exercise of doing it. As far as the boycott is concerned, we still have not gone on John DePietro's show, and we don't have any plans to. I haven't been on his show, and we're not going to.
All right, let's go to Alan Fung now. Mr. Fung, you started this race as what many people considered the favorite. By all means, this has become a very close primary. Did you make strategic mistakes along the way? And if not, how do you explain why this has become a closer race?
Well, it's a race, and I've taken this race very seriously from the beginning. And running the race and running about my real results, real reforms within the city of Cranston. And those message is working with the people of Rhode Island and particularly those within the Republican Party because the results are there. Everyone that drives by Garden City, Chapel View, everyone's heard about the 1,000 new jobs we created. And that's why I'm running for governor, to put people back to work. I didn't have to take a poll to come into a party, create a new party. And, you know, I believe in what I'm doing in Cranston, and I believe I can turn this state around.
Mr. Block, 30 seconds. Do you want to respond to the comment by Mr. Fung?
Which one?
He's suggesting you're taking the temperature to calculate your political career.
Look, Rhode Islanders only care about two things. They care about bringing jobs back. They care about quality educations for their children and their grandchildren. And you're going to hear a lot of statements from Mr. Fung tonight that have nothing to do with solving those two problems. As much as I can, I'm going to focus my answers tonight on how we address fixing the economy in this state and how we raise the level of education in this state.
All right, we're going to get into discussion of some economic issues because clearly jobs and the economy are considered the top issue for most Rhode Islanders. Let's start with Mr. Fung this time. Mr. Fung, what do you think is the one single thing most important for improving Rhode Island's economy?
You know, and that's why I put out a $200 million tax reduction plan that sends a message to many of the business owners in this state, and particularly the small business owner, of which the background I came from a small Chinese family restaurant, that we care about them. We haven't forgotten about them.
I'm asking for one thing, though, not your entire plan. One single thing.
That's what I said.
What is the one single thing that would be...
That $200 million tax reduction plan would make us one of the most competitive in the Northeast and not forget about the small business owners that are struggling, but also send a message out to businesses outside the state that we are serious about them and want those jobs in the state of Rhode Island.
We're going to get into your plan a little bit later, but let's go to Mr. Block now. Ken Block, what do you say? What is the one single thing most important for improving Rhode Island's economy?
The most important thing is we have to find the savings in our spending to pay for tax cuts to make us economically competitive. You need all of those components working together to solve the problem where businesses find Massachusetts a more compelling economic place to be than Rhode Island. That's why the 195 land sits empty. That's why the Superman building sits empty. Until we change the dynamic of our economic climate, we are going to continue to struggle.
For our next question, we'll go to Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay.
Staying with the economy for a minute, gentlemen, I'm wondering, the General Assembly just approved and Governor Chafee signed into law raising the Rhode Island minimum wage to $9 an hour. If you were governor, we'll start with you, Mayor Fung, would you have signed that bill into law?
No, I believe that the better way to create a better economy is and not just raising and continuing to raise the minimum wage, create a healthier business environment so that there are more employers, more jobs there. Not to say that we can't do it, because I've worked in minimum wage jobs before, and I understand the struggles that people go through, but I'd rather have an environment where more people are working, and that minimum wage job is the stepping stone for a better life and not what people have to live upon for their lives.
Mr. Block?
We have to remain economically competitive. We have to make sure that our labor market isn't more expensive than the labor markets that surround us and nationally.
Well, they're not,
us. But that's an important thing to say, because you're asking me what I would do as governor.
Would you have signed the bill, is what I asked you.
As long as we are economically competitive and the rates are similar to other states, I don't have a problem with raising it. However, we have to be very careful that we remain economically competitive. And frankly, I'd like to make sure that our labor force has sufficient skills so that we can get people out of these low-wage jobs and into jobs that pay more and ultimately have a bigger economic impact on the state.
For our next question, we'll go to URI political science professor Maureen Moakley.
I wanted to start with Mr. Block. You articulated a fairly coherent educational policy. Then you talked about support for high-stakes testing, and you also talked about teacher evaluations. At the last minute, the legislature has put into law, frozen the testing and changed the evaluation system. If you were governor, how would you lead in education given these new constraints?
Yeah. The most disappointing thing about our educational system is our inability to reform it. Our results speak for themselves. 70%, more than 70% of Rhode Island High School graduates who matriculate at CCRI need remediation the day they walk in the door. We're handing diplomas to children who don't have the educational achievement to be handed a diploma. Now, high-stakes testing and teacher evaluations are important tools that many other states have used to get better results out of their educational system. We've gone backwards from that. But the important thing to understand is that high-stakes testing by itself doesn't solve the problem of a high school senior with a sixth grade level of education. We need to test effectively in kindergarten. We need to identify the children at risk and put the time, energy, and resources into getting those students onto grade. And the high-stakes test that matters is the transition from third grade to fourth grade. We need to make sure all of our fourth graders are independent readers. If we accomplish that, we'll have substantively improved and solved our educational problem.
Mr. Fung, could you respond to the changes that the legislature made?
Sure. I was certainly disappointed, because during my time as mayor, I've always pushed for innovation and even accountability, whether it's on the city side, but most importantly with respect to our students, because I firmly believe that a good educational system leads to a better workforce. And that's the mantra and the platform and plans that I've put forward to ensure that innovation and accountability. More opportunities for high-performing charter schools, like the push that we had in Cranston for mayoral academies, as well as aligning the curriculum with what is needed for the private workforce of the future by creating a jobs and education council, tying in the public sector, education commissioner, with different public departments that deal with business touch points and the private sector, so that it all aligns to, so that once the students are out of the schools, they're ready with the skills that are needed in the workforce of the future.
You mentioned the commissioner. Would you continue to support Deborah Gist?
I'm not making a commitment to any department heads, but I certainly like a lot of the innovation and accountability that she's put forward. She's someone that really has put forward education reform on the forefront in this state, and a lot of the initiatives that she's put forward I strongly support.
How about you, Mr. Block?
I'm going to ask all director-level reports to the governor to submit their letters of resignation. We'll interview everybody and give everybody an opportunity to reapply for their jobs.
Okay. Government can be abstract for many people, but it didn't escape the notice of Rhode Islanders how they're paying more car tax due to action taken by the General Assembly a few years ago. Alan Fung, do you support eliminating the car tax in Rhode Island? If so, how would you pay for it?
You know, what we really need to do, and that car tax hits many, many people in many cities and towns. And it was frustrating because, you know, as the mayor, we lived through a lot of those cuts, particularly with respect to the car tax. What we have to do is empower the mayors and town administrators to be able to manage their budgets by providing the reform tools that we've been advocating for as those chief executives so that we can manage our budgets and reduce taxes, particularly that car tax, as well as the high burdens that we're facing on property tax. Reforms such as pension reforms providing enabling legislation to freeze COLAs is one area. Providing legislation to be able to move employees, like what we've done in Cranston, to 401ks, benefits similar to the private sector. Allowing municipalities more management rights to reform their budgets is what is needed from the General Assembly and the Chief Executive.
Based on what you're saying, in the first 4 years of a Fung administration, how much of a dent could you make in eliminating the car tax?
If we pass those reforms, it will provide the tools necessary for many of the cities and towns to manage their budgets, including on that car tax, because that's where we really need to do is manage our budgets locally. And we're hamstrung by years of legislation and mandates that have been passed down that tie our hands in many different areas.
Ken Block, you have a plan to partially eliminate the car tax. Tell us how you would pay for it, and is it possible to go even farther than that?
Yes, but you have to start somewhere. And the problem that we suffer from in Rhode Island is our small size and the ridiculously micro way that we allow our local governments to operate. We are a state of 39 cities and towns. Our population collectively is 1 million people. That's smaller than the city of San Diego. And our landmass is smaller than Metro Houston. We have 39 cities and towns that all do, almost all of them, do their own emergency dispatch. We built a state police barracks with a room designed to do statewide emergency 911 dispatch, but we don't use it. There's tremendous savings to be had. We need to go through how we are administering and operating our local governments, and we need to identify every cost savings area that we can have by consolidating services in particular. I don't believe we can solve this problem simply on the backs of workers and their pensions, and in fact, I think that's fundamentally unfair in a lot of ways.
People have been talking about consolidation in Rhode Island for many, many years. Why is it realistic to think that you would have more success in building efficiency into government?
Part of the governor's job, in my opinion, is to educate, it's to use the power of the bully pulpit, and it's to communicate. My job is to highlight how much it costs us to operate 39 different emergency dispatch centers, and how much money we can save if we consolidate into one place.
Mr. Fung, 30 seconds to the same point. Is it realistic to think that you or some other Republican as governor could build a lot more efficiency into government and find a lot of savings there?
Absolutely. We've done it in Cranston. We've consolidated and worked with municipalities in Northern Rhode Island on health care and joined a health care collaborative, save taxpayers' dollars. We're working with the city of Warwick, providing the food service for their Pilgrim Senior Center. We've worked with towns like East Greenwich on purchasing. This has to continue to happen, and it starts with the leader from the top, and this is one of the areas I would push, but also start that discussion on regionalization as well. It has to happen.
For our next question, we go back to Scott McKay.
Mr. Block, I think you had one of the more ridiculous barbs of the campaign when you said that Cranston, compared to Warwick, gets too much state help, gets too much money from the state.
That's actually not what I said.
Well, you did say that it got more money. Will you tell me how you want me to interpret that?
The statement that we made was because Mayor Fung has been talking about the fact that he didn't raise taxes, we're highlighting the fact that Cranston's been the recipient of a tremendous amount of state aid. And it's easier to not raise taxes when you have state taxpayer dollars backing you up.
Okay, so you're saying the mayor's a bad guy because he works a very powerful...
I think he's actually a very nice guy.
...legislative delegation. He's been effective, in other words, in getting more money for Cranston through the delegation. You know, the House Speaker's from Cranston. We all know that. Cranston deserves it, don't you think, more than Warwick? Warwick's got an airport patrolled by the feds. Nobody's escaping from the airport. I'm not too worried about them. But I do hope if somebody escapes from Supermax and the ACI, that Cranston has adequate police facilities to take care of that escapee. They also have the traffic court. They have the National Guard. They have acres and acres of state offices that Warwick doesn't have. Why shouldn't they get more money than Warwick?
Do you work for their tourist board?
No, I do not.
Okay, I'm just curious.
You're
laying out a very rosy picture. Listen, the point of that press release is to challenge the assertion from the mayor that he's running a very, very fiscally fit city. It's hard to make that claim when state taxpayers are bearing a substantial part of the burden of running that. Now, by the way, it's not just the state aid. How about the distressed community money? $2.5 million
That's on a
of
formula.
Taxpayer money.
That's on a formula at every other city. That's a state formula, and you know that.
But that is still taxpayer money that's helping the mayor balance his books. And so the challenge here, listen, we've had so many mayors. We've had so many mayors in this state who have cooked the books. Look what Mayor Cicilline did here. Look at the wreck that he left Providence.
Well, you're not lumping Mayor Fung in with Mayor
what I'm saying
Cicilline,
is the taxpayers are very sensitive to numbers, and we want truth in numbers.
Well, Mayor
and so
Fung,
to make an assumption that you haven't raised the taxes, yet you take more state taxpayer money than most other states, most other cities, that is a challenge that has to be answered.
No, he doesn't take more than most other cities. Providence gets much, much more. It's twice as big, but it gets much more. Mayor Fung, can you answer that? And Mr. Block, I have to say one thing. You've never run anything in your life in the municipal or governmental sector. Does that mean we should trust you to be able to walk right in to think that governor's an entry-level job?
I have never managed my police department into the ditch.
I'm going to hold you there because we are coming up on the end of our first segment, and I want to have Alan Fung have an opportunity to respond. So take it away, Mr. Fung.
Okay. First of all, I find it a little offensive, the implication that we're cooking the books, because our audits are done timely. And what you're also seeing in our books is three straight years now with no tax increases. And yes, I'm proud to be fighting for additional state aid for that state property. We manage a lot of property that's there that houses the prison, the homeless shelter, the traffic tribunal, DVR, DLT, and we provide rescue runs there, sewer services, police services that all we have to manage in conjunction with the state police and all the other services. So, and finally, on the distressed community dollars, those dollars are, and that designation and moniker was what I inherited. We are moving away from that thanks to many initiatives that we've put forward, and that is all proven by audited numbers. So I kind of really take offense at any implication of cooking the books. We're doing our part in due diligence. I'm proud of the fact we haven't had to raise taxes for our taxpayers for three straight years because of the initiatives we put into place.
Quick litmus test question before we go to a break. Kent Block, who's your preferred presidential candidate in 2016?
You're joking, right?
I'm not joking.
Okay. We don't even know who's in the race at this point, and I don't have any.
If you had
I don't
your
brothers,
who would it be?
I really don't have a choice
Alan
right now.
Alan Fung, same question to you.
You know, it is early to tell, but what I can tell you is we have a good stable of Republican governors, chief executives that have led, have a history and track record. So I would take a look at some of those candidates because they are in that chief executive's position.
Okay, we don't get a name from either of you gentlemen. On that note, we're going to take a break. This is a special live political roundtable on Rhode Island Public Radio. We're coming to you live from the Rhode Island Foundation in downtown Providence. We have a great studio audience in addition to those listening at home, and we'll be right back.